Point Site, Jeremy in Kentucky, and Republic Broadcasting Network. Please go to republicbroadcasting.org. Smash the donate, send the fundage, keep free speech alive for your children and grandchildren so that you can have quality broadcasting like amongst the many hosts that are great on RBN. Richard Carey was on his show today. As I said on the show, I was painting for two of our great RBN listeners and contributors. They have bought a house close to me in West Kentucky and have hired me to paint their house. Thought it was pretty cool. T's yelling in the background, so we're just going to have to deal with that. And I just got off work, so got the prep from Patrick, and we are here with Patrick Slattery on the Patrick and Jeremy Show. Patrick, excuse welcome.
Excuse me, citizen.
Yes.
I need to commandeer your dog. No, I am going on a very important crime-fighting mission.
Well, yes, actually,
I am recording a radio show, but I assure you, I am a crime fighter. I'm a licensed crime fighter. Have we started yet?
Okay, breaking news.
I need to commandeer your dog.
Breaking news, ladies and gentlemen. The Cape Crusader is out on a mission tonight, and he has commandeered a dog to walk. I guess Mr. T is not available right now. The Cape Crusader indeed is in action. We've caught this in action. This is live. Patrick, are you there?
I am here. I do need to pick up after this dog. I caught it in mid business, but I think we're fine now.
Yeah. So yeah, I'll fill in a little bit while you do that. That's kind of like in those old cop shows, you know, where the guy, it's from the '80s mostly. I think Miami Vice maybe did it a few times. And the show Hunter, the cop show, where they stop a car and they put their badge on the front window, like, I'm taking this car, I gotta chase this bad guy. Right? And then you're doing that
I'm
with someone's dog.
I'm taking this dog, I need to chase a bad guy.
Because the dog on the leash, that's part of the crime fighting political analysis. So by the way, if you want to donate to RBN and get in on the book drive, which is in honor of John Statmiller, you donate $100 minimum and put your name in for the drawing of the book of the week. There is a plethora of books. There's a harem of books. There's a lot of books that you can get in on. The Bill of Rights handbook, the Citizens Rule book, Year of the Rat, talking about Bill Clinton. I guess he's the rat. The Ron Paul Uprising, they own it all by means of toxic currency. The New World Order defeated. We've had a lot of New World Order since the 90s when the Elder Bush said that. So all of these are great books. It's just this big, like, extravaganza. What's the word? What's the German word for buffet? It's that word for books. You know what I'm talking about.
It's smorgasbord.
Smorgasbord of books. Isn't that German?
Or Yiddish.
Something. So, and we also have a smorgasbord of prep and information to go over here. I listened to Jeffrey Sachs talking to the UN Security Council about the different wars that have been fought over the last decade. It was very fascinating and how they could be resolved. I think he even got into how they could have been prevented. So I don't know how you want to play this, Patrick. Do you want to play clips of that, or do you want to just discuss it and tell everybody what he said?
So I have posted it on nationalbugle.com. On the left-hand column, the first column is the War and Peace column, and you'll find it near the top, maybe at the top. So it's already there, and people can listen to it themselves. It's 14 minutes and 15 seconds. And it's time well spent. So it's up there. I think it's very significant for really what it represents. So, you know, Jeffrey Sachs is somebody that had originally been on kind of my rogues gallery because he was an advisor to the Russian government. Actually, he'd been advising the Soviet government before the Soviet Union split up. And then he was an advisor to the Russian government on how to privatize their economy. And of course, that didn't go so well. In fact, it went horribly. And Jeffrey Sachs, I presume he's a Jew because his name is Sachs and he taught at Harvard. I'm pretty sure he's a Jew. And after the privatization of the Russian economy, a bunch of Jews wound up controlling it. Jewish oligarchs wound up controlling it. I have heard him say that the plan that he drew up was never implemented, and the privatization scheme, the way it was carried out, was not his scheme. So, whatever, I don't know, but I do know that over the past couple of years, first with the war in Ukraine, and then now with the Israeli bombing of Gaza, the attempted genocide of the Gazans, that he has been a very, very good voice, and he has access to, well, he has access to the UN Security Council, where he is talking to the UN ambassadors of 15 countries on the Security Council. So he has access in a way that none of us do. And so
real quick just to set it up for people that didn't listen, or that maybe will listen later. So this is the context. He's addressing the UN Security Council, and you've told us a little bit about Sachs. This has been recently, correct?
Oh, this was on I believe Tuesday of last week, the 20th? It was last week, about 8 days ago, maybe. Maybe it was It was Monday the 20th. I can't remember. But yeah. I think that's what it was, Monday the 20th. And he spoke really very clearly. He has been blaming the United States policy for forcing the hand of the Russians not just in the invasion of February 2022, but emphasizing the role of America in overthrowing the government of Ukraine in February 2014, and all of the anti-Russian policies. So he's been emphasizing that, and now with what's going on with Israel and Gaza, even though I presume he's Jewish, he has been completely on the side of the Palestinians, and he's speaking very clearly, and talking about Security Council Resolution 242, which was that passed in 1969. It was a year or two after the 1967 war, where Israel captured this territory, including Gaza, including East Jerusalem, including the West Bank. So he made a good speech, but it's not just that you had somebody speaking in front of the Security Council. The thing is, nobody on the Security Council, even the American ambassador, the black lady, nobody objected to him. And and what you are hearing is everybody now is talking about 242, this which is very, very well known. It was, like I say, passed over a half a century ago, and whenever there's a peace process for the Middle East, 242 is always at the center of it. But the thing is, over the past few decades, because Israel settled these radical fanatics in the West Bank and in East Jerusalem, and they're there as facts on the ground. They are there to hold down the fort. Whenever there's been a discussion, it's like, well, 242 will be the starting point for negotiations, but there will be negotiations on redrawing the border so that the Israelis can keep their settlers. So the major settlements, some of them will be annexed to Israel, and maybe Israel will transfer some of the Negev Desert to the new Palestinian state. That's always been there's always been that as part of it. And one of the problems with that is that it requires negotiations. But now you're just hearing 242, period. Nobody is talking about redrawing borders. Nobody's talking about negotiations. It's 242. And this is what the Russians are talking about. This is what the Chinese are talking about. This is what the Arab League's talking about. And it looks like this is what's going to happen, that there will be a requirement for Israel to abide by 242, finally, and withdraw completely from the West Bank and East Jerusalem. You're already having, was it Spain? Some country is already saying we're going to recognize a Palestinian state, which presumably means the Palestinian Authority. And, you know, you can say, oh, well, the Palestinian Authority, that's run by Mahmoud Abbas, and they're just kind of Israeli pawns. Well, it might be run by the Mahmoud Abbas today, but the thing is, last time they had an election in the Palestinian Authority, last time they had legislative elections, it was won by Hamas. So I think it's extremely significant. The speech itself was significant, but it's representative of this, this new paradigm where they're not talking about 242 as the starting point for negotiation. They're talking about 242 as the solution. And it would require a Palestinian state. There's no negotiations about the borders, so just go back to the 1967 borders. And, you know, at this point, Israel would probably be lucky to get away with that if this goes, because I know I'm talking a lot, I'm kind of excited, but the thing is, because of all the destruction of Gaza, nobody around the world has any sympathy for these settlers, these illegal aliens on the West Bank and East Jerusalem, who are very violent, very aggressive. Nobody has any sympathy for them. Nobody is going to, after the government of Israel has destroyed the homes of probably more than a million Gazans, because I think they've destroyed about half of the homes there, nobody is going to have any qualms about requiring these illegal aliens to leave, these violent illegal aliens to leave the West Bank so that and East Jerusalem so that the Palestinians can have a state there. And, you know, if there are nice new homes that were built by or for the settlers, well, good. That's where displaced Gazans can move into, you know. So it's really significant. The longer this thing goes on, the worse it's going to be for Israel, because it'll be not just that you have to vacate these territories, but you're starting to get talk about, well, what about reparations? What about war reparations, where Gaza's going to be rebuilt? Who's going to pay for it, right? Is it going to be international donors, or the Israelis going to be forced to pay for it? So, and this is something that not in that speech, but in a later program, Jeffrey Sachs was raising that issue about who's going to pay for the rebuilding of Gaza. So I thought it was significant, really significant, and I just wanted to share it with the RBN audience.
Yeah, so I've got a bunch of comments. I'll see if I can remember them and have you address them. So just for the RBN audience, they can catch this video on nationalbugle.com?
That's correct.
Okay. And so what they're going to find when you look up Jeffrey Sachs, too, he is a former director of the Earth Institute at Columbia. He's a professor there. So he does address, like, climate change. So for the RBN audience, I know there's a lot of RBN listeners that are total anti-climate change. I get that. But we're just analyzing what this guy said to the UN in regards to a two-state solution, which is very significant. And in his Wikipedia, Jeffrey Sachs is from a Jewish family, and we know Wikipedia is heavily controlled. So if they tell you the person is Jewish, you can pretty much bet that they are. So he is a Jew. And this is what I wanted to bring up. So you have these Jews that feel like they have to get up ahead of this, you know, like Jews for Peace and all of that. And you have a lot of Jewish groups now protesting the violence in Palestine. And there's a part of that that's group behavior where they want to get ahead of that and say, well, it's not all Jews. We're not all advocating this, they're responding to this backlash of pretty much anti-Semitism, especially on the left. So this guy's got some street cred, talking about sustainable development in his speech and being in the position that he was in, you know, in the Earth Institute. So there's one. He's doing a little bit more than just getting ahead of it, because these other Jewish groups aren't talking about, to my knowledge, they're not talking about a two-state solution. He is actually bringing up a two-state solution here, which I don't think you're going to find very many, if any, Jews in public light doing that. And then also he's talking about the different wars and conflicts over the last decade. He brings up the overthrow of Gaddafi, the Syrian, the attempted overthrow of Syria. He actually indicts America as, you know, in on that. And then he talks about, you know, the Russia-Ukraine, and then, of course, the Israel-Palestinian genocide. And he talks about how there could be solutions to these. So it may be just a little more than a Jew trying to get ahead of the game here and head off anti-Semitism. He's actually bringing up good things. Now, he did not indict the Jews in this. Now, of course, I wouldn't expect him to. Not many Jews, especially, or any leftists, are indicting Jewish power. They're pretty much speaking against the Israel, you know, actions against Palestine. So there's that. I wanted to bring those things up to you and get your comment on it. What's your feeling for this guy, as far as, is he trying to get ahead of it, or is he legit bringing up concerns here?
No, I mean, I think he's somebody who is worried about World War III that would destroy civilization. I mean, I think that's his main concern. And, you know, regarding talking, I don't expect anybody, or at least nobody from America, who is going to be able to, who's prominent enough to address the United Nations Security Council, because this doesn't happen all the time. It's not like some congressional committee. This type of thing doesn't happen very often. He has been working a lot with the United Nations on stuff, you know, climate change or whatever. He's got this long history. And so he has connections. He has incredible connections and incredible access to high ranking officials and even government leaders. And so I don't expect somebody. Maybe somebody from the Arab world, maybe an Arab leader, maybe President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad of Iran, maybe somebody like that would start talking about Jewish power in front of the United Nations. That's about it. I don't expect anybody from our country to do that. It is our job. I mean, unfortunately, and it's a thankless job, and it's a job you don't get paid for. But you know, one thing. And he's on Alexander Mercurius's show every now and then, maybe.
And I'm alone. Skin, yeah, chill me to the bone.
Attention, freedom-loving patriots. Are you ready to dive deep into the principles that founded our great nation? Join me, Peter Serafin, and the Institute on the Constitution as we light the way to a brighter future with the Liberty Lighthouse Classroom. At liberty-lighthouse.com/classroom, you'll find a treasure trove of online courses on the U.S. Constitution, carefully crafted to empower you with knowledge to defend your rights and liberty. Whether you're a student, a history enthusiast, or just a concerned citizen, these courses are for you. Gain a comprehensive understanding of our Constitution's principles, the wisdom of our founding fathers, and how to apply them in today's world. As a special offer to our freedom-loving listeners of Republic Broadcasting Network, use coupon code RBN at checkout and get 20% discount on any course. Join the Liberty Lighthouse Classroom and be a part of the movement to uphold the values that have made our nation exceptional. Unleash the power of knowledge and protect what truly matters, our Constitution. Visit liberty-lighthouse.com/classroom today. Don't miss this incredible opportunity. Use code RBN for 20% off. Together, we'll be the beacon of freedom our founding generation envisioned. Liberty Lighthouse Classroom, illuminating minds, empowering patriots.
Did you know the IRS publicly admits that income tax is collected by voluntary compliance? Get the information you need to help you avoid income tax with these five easy steps. All you have to do is go to avoidincometax.com to get your five easy steps on how to avoid the IRS income tax. Escape the IRS. Let avoidincometax.com help you. We guarantee our five easy steps or your money back. Go to avoidincometax.com.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee that's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
It's a job you don't get paid for. But you know, one thing, and he's on Alexander Mercurius's show every now and then, maybe a couple of times a week or so. I mean, every other week or so he'll be on. They'll have him for half an hour. And a couple of weeks ago,
the Duran.
Yeah. On the Duran, he'll be on the Duran. They'll have him on. And he's, you know, he blames the neocons, which is that's the term that that Alexander Mercurius is always using, the neocons. Well, we know who the neocons are. But the thing is, a couple of weeks ago, after this stuff started in Gaza, he said, well, we all know that American foreign policy for decades has been controlled by a cabal. I thought, whoa there, Professor Zach. Don't you know cabal is an anti-Semitic trope? Cabal,
cool. It was an anti-Semitic trope.
Yeah, the origin of the word cabal, the etymology of it, literally is from Kabbalah. When Dr. Duke told me that, like, I was thinking, I think I'm better at etymology than he is. But then I confirmed, well, no, actually it is. That's what it's from. So there he was using... And Jeffrey Sachs would know that cabal is an anti-Semitic trope, and he uses it anyway. So
this guy to the left, I mean, to the left, this guy's kind of doing maybe what Rush Limbaugh did for the right. I mean, he's bringing up some valid issues here, and he's appealing to people's sense of outrage. And I'm not trying to paint the guy as controlled opposition, even though maybe he is, I don't know. But he's bringing stuff up that people are talking about, right? And he's coming to the very edge of talking about Jewish power without talking about it, right? Because, you know, Limbaugh did that.
Yeah, but
I'm not poo-pooing his speech. I'm just
well, like I say, I have been referring to him for years and years as a villain, as, you know, the person who drafted this privatization scheme that was then implemented by other Jews from the Treasury Department, like Lawrence Summers and Peter Orszag, alongside the Jewish privatization minister from the Russian cabinet, Anatoly Chubais, you know, and like there's, it was a very, very Jewish thing, this privatization. Now he's disavowed it, tried to disown it, and maybe rightly so. He's an economist, and you know, like I don't know if I would agree with a lot of his economic ideas. He takes the, like, I think there is global climate change, but he seems to take it a lot more seriously than I do, or like it's a lot more of a threat. But he hasn't been talking about that. I've been, over the past couple of years, since he's been very outspoken on these foreign policy matters, and he's not a foreign policy person, he's an economist, but he's been very, very outspoken. And he rarely mentions anything about climate change. It's just, even though that was his, that was a big thing for him in the, you know, in the aughts, for instance, right now he's focused on these wars. And I think he should be, I am, you know, so, but the reason I'm bringing up the speech, it's not so much because it's not so much that I'm trying to say, oh, this guy is a hero, he's our leader or anything, but it's somebody saying these types of things, is allowed to address the Security Council for 15 minutes, and the Security Council is very receptive. And it's, you know, it's partly that the Security Council, well, why did, was he invited there? Well, he's invited there because China is the chair right now. They have every 6 months, the chairmanship of the Security Council rotates. And right now China is the chair. So China brought him there. And this is what they know what he says. They didn't just say, well, let's see what this expert has to say. China said, well, we know what this expert's going to say. Let's bring him here to say it, right? Because this is the direction they're pushing it. They're pushing for just an immediate resolution of this thing, not based on a new round of negotiations or a new peace process. It's like, no, I mean, we as the Security Council back in 1969 said that this is how it should be. And now we're going to, you know, we're going to put our foot down, because for the past at least 40 years since the 45 years since Jimmy Carter brought Menachem Begin and Anwar Sadat to Camp David, the United States Zio government has been in charge of the peace process. And what has it done for 45 years? Not peace. And so now you've got Russia and China and a lot of their allies who, many of them are on the Security Council right now. I know Brazil's. So you got five permanent members, and then you got these other countries that get elected for 2-year terms. But you've got, I'm pretty sure India's on right now. Brazil is on right now. United Arab Emirates, which is going to be in.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3DBunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3DBunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3DBunkers.com for more details, or visit 3DBunkers.com.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names, Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Memory, your lamplight is burning holes. Recover the damage. Bring it all home.
Other countries they get elected for 2-year terms, but you've got, I'm pretty sure India's on right now, Brazil is on right now, United Arab Emirates, which is going to be in BRICS in January, they're on, and this is the direction they're moving. We've already settled this, and now it's time to implement it, and I think that's really significant.
Yeah, and it's like the Russia-Ukraine conflict sort of set us up for this. It demonstrated that the globe is not under the U.S. hegemony anymore, the Jewish-dominated United States hegemony, and that these other powerful countries are going to come to the table. And as we've talked about, it looks like they're trying to push Israel to the table in a very nice way, but still push them nonetheless. To get a resolution to this. There's a few more things I want to address on this speech, maybe just stepping back from a 40,000 foot view. It did concern me a little bit, and I wanted you to get your comments on this. It did concern me a little bit about this talk of the UN stepping into sovereign countries and resolving things. You know, now, of course, we're against, and most RBN listeners are against Israel genociding Palestine, right? But this whole concept of the UN coming in and taking control of sovereign nations, taking control is a harsh phrase. Let me rephrase that. Being moderators, even with peacekeepers, right? That sounds good in this instance, but how could that turn bad on us, right? Is this playing into, and I'm not saying Sachs is necessarily doing this, but this whole concept of the UN coming in, into a sovereign nation and installing peacekeepers. This could turn on us. This could turn on us in America. It could turn on us in a bad way or a good way. Right?
No.
And to me, this whole concept is giving power to the UN. I want you to address that concern.
Okay. So the idea of the UN, these principles that the UN was founded on and that Jeffrey Sachs is emphasizing for his part, is self-determination and respect for sovereignty. So it's not as if the UN is going to go into Israel or Palestine and tell them what to do. But the and you can, you know, argue with whether you like this or not, but the purpose of the UN isn't it, like, theoretically, it isn't to tell countries what to do with their own internal affairs. But when you've got international affairs, like a war between two separate countries, which is right now, you have a war between an internationally recognized country, Israel, although there are some countries that don't recognize it, and then this stateless territory, this territory, Gaza, but also the, you know, the West Bank, which currently no state claims, but it is kind of, it does have this international aspect to it. And so the idea is that here the United Nations is intervening in international affairs, not in domestic affairs, but affairs between two countries. So that's, and you know, this is one of the things that also that the there's this big movement to promptly recognize the independence of Palestine as an independent country. So, and the peacekeepers, to the extent there are peacekeepers, and this is what's being talked about, these would be introduced into Gaza to keep the Israelis out. And presumably this would be at the request or with the permission of a Palestinian state, which is probably on the verge of being recognized and admitted to the United Nations. The Palestinian Authority has observer status at the United Nations. So they do have some representation at the United Nations, but they're not considered an independent state or a sovereign state at this point. But this is something that could happen really, really quickly. So, and, you know, that's kind of how the United Nations was intended. The United Nations wasn't intended to be a world government. It was intended to be a place where various countries could come and hash things out. Because before the, for instance, the establishment of the League of Nations after World War I, you'd have to, like, if you're a small country, like a big country might be able to maintain embassies in every country around the world. But even a place like Canada, Canada doesn't, I mean, it's just too small. It's too hard for Canada to maintain an embassy in every country around the world. I remember Benjamin Fulford's father was the ambassador to Saudi Arabia and I think it was Yemen at the same time because they couldn't afford to have two embassies, right? So things like that. If you're like, there might be reasons why Bolivia and Pakistan need to talk about things, but you know, they're on the opposite sides of the globes from each other. They would have a hard time maintaining hundreds of embassies around the world. So that's kind of what the United Nations was intended for. Now, the way it's been used is it, especially over the past 30 years since the end of the Cold War, the way the United Nations has been used is as a vehicle for legitimizing the, you know, Jewish State Department's foreign policy. That's what it's been used for. And of course, it was used also in 1950 to authorize the American action in the Korean War, which it was able to do because the Soviet Union was boycotting the United Nations Security Council because the communist government in Beijing was not being recognized, and Chiang Kai-shek's government in Taiwan, in Taipei, was holding the seat in the United Nations and in the United Nations Security Council in the name of China. But mostly, if you look at most of the history, say between 1950 and 1991, for the most part, the United Nations was just, it was just like a debating ground, a debating stage, and they weren't enforcing anything on anybody. largely because you always had, you know, the United States on one side of anything important and the Soviet Union on the other side. And unless you get all five permanent members of the Security Council to agree on something, you know, nothing can happen. If, you know, because each of those five countries has a veto. So it's not as if I'm saying, oh, we should have one world government or whatever. I don't have like particularly deep feelings on the United Nations. I certainly would not want a world government, and I wouldn't want the United Nations or any international body to come in and impose itself on countries domestically. But if you've got a war between two countries, you know, it can matter for other countries, and whether it's the United Nations or just, you know, other countries saying, look, you got to stop this. I don't see anything wrong with that.
Well, there is an unstoppable interaction between nations. I mean, since World War One, even since the 20th century. And, you know, I can see the logic that they had in installing the UN to sort of police is a strong word, but sort of negotiate, I guess, maybe is a better word, issues between sovereign states and nations. All right. And I think that's what you're alluding to. And just to play a UN advocate just real quick, if I remember right, when Bush the Younger decided to invade Iraq, he did not have UN support. It was the coalition of the willing. Is that
right?
Is that
right? He did not get UN support. Correct. Did not get UN authorization. In his father got some sort of something from the UN. I'm trying to remember exactly. And that was that was in what was it in? So the Saddam Hussein's invasion of Kuwait took place in August 1990. And Bush was able to get something past the UN Security Council, some sort of authorization. And the reason was because by late 1990, the Soviet Union was already in turmoil. And Gorbachev, although he did not want to have war in Iraq, the whatever resolution it was worded in such a way that it wasn't saying we're going to go to war, but it was kind of like an ultimatum to Saddam Hussein. And it was something that you know, Bush was able to use as some sort of fig leaf of international legitimacy when he bombed the hell out of Iraq. And then for 4 days, there was that 4 day invasion, but then they didn't even occupy it. So there was that, but his son was not able to get anything like that. And so he went ahead with the coalition of the willing. And what you've had since then, the United Nations has been the subject of a lot of conspiracy theories. You know, you had for a long time, various militia groups, and they kept saying, oh, United States is going to be occupied by the United Nations. Like, really? I mean, the United Nations, during all that time in the 1990s and the aughts, when there was all this paranoia about the United Nations was thoroughly dominated by the United States. It was completely dominated by the United States. So, like, the whole premise made zero sense, that the United Nations was somehow going to occupy the United States. Why would that be necessary? The Jews dominated the United States. The United States dominated the United Nations. What would be the point? So,
well, yeah, the U.S. was after the disintegration, maybe is a better word, of the Soviet Union. I think the U.S. saw itself as the unipolar power, and it was for a little over a decade. And that all plays into Bush the Elder's, you know, New World Order speech. I know you love that phrase, don't you, Patrick? New World Order.
Yeah,
but I mean, it was. He's not wrong. He wasn't wrong. I mean, the U.S. did in the 90s was, you know, a unipolar power and could wield the U.N. And I think the only reason that Bush the Elder got any kind of a wink from the U.N. at all was because, you know, that came on the heels of those fake speeches by that Saudi prince about babies in incubators being thrown down on the floor by Saddam, something like that.
Yeah,
there was a lot of propaganda.
Yeah. You had that. There was something more or less unprecedented about Saddam Hussein's, not his invasion of Kuwait, but his annexation of Kuwait. Because I remember at the time, this you didn't have that. You didn't have, I couldn't remember any single example since the United Nations was founded in 1946. So between 1946 and 1990, I don't think you could find a single example of a sovereign country invading and annexing another sovereign country. I mean, you had Indonesia invaded East Timor, which at the time was a Portuguese colony. So it invaded it and annexed it. And even that wasn't considered legitimate, and eventually East Timor became an independent country itself. But you just didn't have that. You had plenty of, you had, I guess Morocco had invaded the West Sahara, but the West Sahara was not a internationally recognized country. It had been a colony of Spain. You didn't have one country annexing another country during the era of the United Nations. So it was unprecedented. And it was actually, I remember at the time, I thought it was a really bad move for Saddam Hussein to annex it. He didn't need to annex it. He could have just, regime changed it. That happened all the time. The United States was always doing that. But once he annexed it, he did something that was unprecedented. And it was a violation of the UN Charter. And both Kuwait and Iraq were members of the UN. So it really gave the Bush administration an opening. I think it was a bad move to annex Kuwait.
Well, and the Iraq, who was a proxy of the U.S. in the 80s in the Iraq-Iran war, right? This gave the U.S. an opportunity. I mean, this is sort of playing off some conspiracy theories about the U.S. Basically knowing that Saddam was going to do this and allowing it to give them an opportunity to, come in and put him down, I guess, and then put sanctions on him. Which led to, Madeleine Albright's 500,000 children and old people dying, and it was worth it. And that led to Iraq talking about doing the oil for food thing where they come off the U.S. dollar, which I think was the purpose of the 2003 invasion, was punishment to Iraq for daring to go off to trade oil outside of the U.S. dollar. So all of that, I'm sort of making all these connections on the fly. Yeah. What I'm getting at, the conspiracy was that the U.S. wanted and knew that Saddam was going to invade Kuwait, knowing that that would give them cover to come in and just take him down.
So there was a meeting between Saddam Hussein and the American ambassador to Iraq. I forgot her name. It was a woman. I don't know if she even spoke Arabic. And so there might have been some misunderstanding at the time. Saddam Hussein left the meeting thinking, because Saddam Hussein at the meeting said that Kuwait had been stealing its oil through diagonal drilling, which, at the time, I didn't even think that was possible. But of course, the entire fracking industry in the United States is built on that technology. It was relatively new technology back then. I remember one of my professors saying, no, you can drill down and then turn a corner and drill sideways. And I thought, no, you can't. But of course, that's what the entire fracking industry is based on. So anyway, Saddam Hussein had told the American ambassador that he was planning to invade Kuwait to get them to stop stealing Iraqi oil. And he was under the impression that the American ambassador had said, well, you do what you need to do, or, we understand. He thought he had the understanding of the United States.
Sometimes when your hopes have all been shattered, it's nowhere to turn. You wonder how you keep going. Think of all the things that really matter and the chances you earn.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org, smash that donate button like Russian peacekeepers smashing through the Azov neo-Nazi terrorists in the Donbass.
I don't think you can explain politics without looking at Jewish power any more than you can explain physics without dealing with gravity.
9/11 was a jointly conducted covert operation that involved multiple states, the Saudis, the Israelis, and what you could call the deep state in the United States.
With anti-Semitic remarks.
yeah, you're jiggling juice, we used to say, the dancing Israelis.
So even the Republicans now are compromising, and they're pushing issues that are destructive to the white race.
They would always say, like, are we just going to talk about this stuff on the radio? Like, what are we going to do about it?
Either we force the democracy to work by actually getting the ballot access, getting the candidates, getting in office, getting our message out there to the people, or we expose just how undemocratic it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few highlights. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I have been using Extendivite for many years. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
He was under the impression that the American ambassador had said, well, you know, you do what you need to do, or, you know, we understand. He thought he had the understanding of the United States. And it's really like maybe some people know. I'm not 100% clear on whether the ambassador had purposely given that impression or had accidentally given that impression or what, or if she just as an ambassador, and maybe she was, I don't know if she was a career diplomat or not. You know, a lot of ambassadors are not career diplomats. They're just like people who give a lot of money to presidential campaigns. And I don't know if she, maybe she gave Saddam Hussein a go ahead that she wasn't really authorized to do. I really don't know. But at any rate, the whole thing was a disaster. It destabilized the Middle East. It's still destabilized. And it was a bad move for everybody all the way around.
Well, I mean, you know, that led into Project for a New American Century, the UN plan. Yeah, that led into Project for a New American Century, Kagan, you know, playing off the UN plan, Greater Israel. what was that one Jewish general talking about 7 countries in 7 years, all of that. Back when the U.S. was a unipolar, you know, back when the globe was pretty much dominated by the U.S. Now it's not the case. Now it's not the case, and you got Russia and China, major players, probably utilizing the U.N. If I'm catching your drift. I played left drift in high school, by the way. I'm pretty good at catching drifts. The U.N., Russia and China utilizing the U.N. now to sort of force a peace negotiation here and maybe even come to some sort of negotiation with Ukraine and Russia, where the Donbass is going to be recognized and given rights. That could all play in too. And so just to put a fine point on this point of contention, you know, there are a lot of listeners that would say, well, this could set a precedent if the UN intervenes in Israel, which would be a good thing. This could set a precedent for the UN invading, you know, and intervening in sovereign countries in the midst of a virus outbreak or whatever, a climate outbreak, you know, in sovereign countries to enact, especially if different nations resolve themselves to UN sovereign over these matters. That's the concern. And we're at the end of the show pretty much, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, and the way it turns out, it may very well be the UN playing some sort of formal role in this. But what's really happening is China and Russia are just putting their foot down and saying, the United States has had its way as, you know, the broker in the Middle East for 45 years, and they have completely screwed it up, and we're not putting up with it anymore. So likely the United Nations will have some sort of formal role, but maybe not. Maybe they won't. Maybe it'll be a BRICS settlement or something. It might be. But it wouldn't, even if it is the United Nations, it's not setting any precedent, because the United Nations has had roles in settling international conflicts and sending peacekeepers and whatnot in the past. So it's not a precedent.
Right. In the past, it's been on behalf of the U.S., and in the future, it could be on behalf of the Russia and China bipolar dominance. I don't know. Anyway, we're at the end of the show. Let's pick this up on Patrick and Jeremy Part 2. Stay classy.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.